Well, actually, first I want to welcome the presenters. So first up is Tom Richards, Stanton Randall, and Jacob. And then in the second part of the evening, Nadir Shabahangi. Very, very delighted to have all of you, and thank you so much for presenting tonight. I'm really looking forward to hearing and seeing what you have brought for us. I want to welcome also people in the audience who maybe haven't been to the Process Work Center before. Very big welcome to you too. And welcome to those who know the place as well. So a couple of things I want to just say. We are experimenting and learning with our distance technology. So Stan Siver has been a wonderful help and initiator in getting our distance access up and running. So I hope you'll excuse us if there's a, you know, if we need to just briefly attend to something like sound quality or something. We're still in the early stages of being able to make our programs accessible to people at a distance. And tonight, if they do manage to call in, we do have some people trying. We may be joined by someone in Poland, Bogna, who with Nadir was responsible for developing the program that he's going to be talking about, and there may be a couple of other people if they make it. It's always a bit of a hit and miss thing. And Bogna, I think it's like some horrible time in the super early morning, so she may not wake up, I don't know. and what else? Oh, the other thing is that this is a by donation event, so Basiliki is filming for us, and also she's going to be collecting donations at the end. We suggest $10, though if you can't manage 10, that's fine, whatever or nothing if that's what you need to do. But we do use the proceeds from these events. We've been funding books for the Process Work Research Library. We've been investing in equipment and also supporting research projects that people undertake where they need funds to be able to complete it. So anything that you can contribute, we'd really appreciate, and it helps to keep these events going. So I think that's it for now. I'd like to hand over to you and introduce you briefly. Would you rather I introduce you, or would you like to introduce yourselves as part of what you plan? Me? Okay.
We didn't plan that part. What? We didn't plan that part.
Oh, okay. Well, starting with Anne and Stan, they've worked with people who are near death or in altered states of consciousness in their private practice for about 20 years. And they also say that they've been training in the School of Life for 60 years. I think that's combined, right?
Right.
Yes. and they serve on the faculty of the Sacred Art of Living and Dying Center, and they teach across North America and are in ongoing training at the Process Work Institute here, which is what this building is. And then Tom Richards on my left. He is, sorry, I clipped it over. There we go. He's a professional educator, researcher, and consultant, and he facilitates personal and professional growth in various settings, individuals, organizations, churches, and families. And he, as well as developing continuing education programs, he works with individuals who are experiencing memory loss, ranging from mild cognitive impairment to Alzheimer's and coma, which is the topic of our forum tonight. So everybody's in the right place expecting that topic, I hope. He's also been studying and researching and applying process work for the last 17 years. And I'm aware some people are more aware of what process work is about than others. And I think rather than take your time now to explain it, I'll assume that where necessary, that'll be explained by the presenters. So again, thanks for coming. I'm looking forward to this very much. Thanks a lot. Oh, and one more thing. If you want to ask a question, and we will have a period for question and answers at the end of both presenters, so we don't crowd out the second presenter with questions and answers. So write down your questions, save them for the end, and if you do need to speak, it would help us really a lot if you wait and get the microphone, because if there are people on the phone, they won't hear unless you're speaking into a mic. So, is anyone on the phone? Hello? Nobody here yet. But Anyway, they might come back.
I'm here.
Somebody's here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, it's you.
He's actually Stan staying on the phone waiting.
It's you.
He's on the phone because if he gets off the phone and nobody else is dialed into the teleconference, we get this music that we didn't ask for. So he's kind of staving off the music.
The microphone isn't only for the phone, but for the recording that we're making.
What?
For the recording.
So.
Yes, that's what I just said.
Okay. When do you want, what's our timeline? How much time? Hour, each, and a half hour for questions, or we need a break in the middle?
She wants us to do questions. Okay.
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 Testing. I'm on.
Anyway, thanks so much, Lee, for the introductions and for gathering us together. And thanks to everybody that's here. It's like exciting. Familiar faces and some newer faces. We also want to thank the process work spirits, the ancestor spirits, and the first people spirits, and the spirits of the land that we're on. And our deep personal appreciations to Arnie and Amy Mendel and to all of us that are learning and developing together in process work awareness or whatever awareness school that draws us to come together and be interested in the subject, because there's so much that we're all collectively learning. It's been wonderful to meet Nadir tonight for the first time and to be able to present with him, so thanks. And we just want to thank our own ancestors and relatives, because basically tonight the stories that we're going to tell are going to be from our own relatives. Some who are still here and some who have passed on. So we were just wondering how many of you have experienced caregiving or have a relative or a friend with Alzheimer's or dementia or memory loss. Well, I do that, yeah. It's about half. And then how many of us here are worried about getting some form of memory loss or dementia or Alzheimer's? Already have it.
That was the question.
Here we go. Right. That's great.
What was that?
Yeah. So Tom's going to be presenting some of the research component, working directly with people with Alzheimer's and dementia. Stan and I are also going to be presenting some of our own personal research on basically teaching caregivers, which I know Nadir will also share his program that he's doing for that. So this work is just developing. Some of it new and some of it ancient. It's like we're having to remember. I think that's what I often feel, is that we're having to re-remember how to really honor our elders in the late stages of life. And that we all be curious when we work with, I think there's a curiosity that we have naturally when we're with children, that we are so eager for anything that they're doing and learning, and that we use there's a freedom that we have to talk in unusual ways or move in unusual ways to match the child as it's learning its development. And I think that we don't give that same space and freedom to people at the end of their life when they're also doing things in new ways. And our learning has to change to adjust to help them into the later stages in life. And so I think that the beginnings and endings of lives are great teaching times for us. I'm too nervous. I think I just got really nervous anyway. I guess I'll just keep going. There's something so wise, and it's like so amazing. Like this one's one. We've had this great experience. relatives are our main thing right now. We're just like focusing on that as our teaching. And so I had my Aunt Lee, she's like one of my ancestors now. And she had very advanced Alzheimer's dementia. And she basically spent the last 2 to 3 years of her life with her head down saying, "Where's Bob?" maybe 1,000 times a day for year after year. "Where's Bob? Where's Bob?" And Bob is her husband, who's almost this close to her as much of every day as he could be at the end of her life. Phenomenal care, and they were able to keep her at home most of the time and have caregivers up until the end. So, but her repetitive, her like ongoing quest was, "Where's Bob?" And he was always such a great, dutiful husband. He would always say, "I'm right here, Lee. I'm right here." And so that was his repetitive statement that he said. I sometimes wonder who has memory loss and dementia, because often when we're with somebody who repeats things, we get caught in the same cycle of just repeating things back. And so there's my uncle being just as simplistic in his communication style as my aunt. She would say, "Where's Bob?" And he would say, "I'm right here." Back and forth, back and forth. We went to visit one time, and we just thought, well, is there any way we can enter the system? And we were pondering it, and Stan was really, like, sat back, and he thought, okay. And so one of the times when she said, "Where's Bob?" he said, "Where are you, Aunt Lee?" And she went, "Where's Bob?" Nothing. But he said again, "Where are you, Aunt Lee?" And she paused for a second, and for us, that's a signal that something's changed in the system. There's that little hesitation. And so she hesitated for a second, and then she said, "Where's Bob?" And then Stan said one more time, "Where are you, Lee?" And this time she stopped completely. And then she said, "I don't know." And I've told that story many times, but I just woke up this week in Rise. That was a conversation that they had. And I was so excited about it. Like, that was probably the first conversation that that woman had had in at least 2.5 years at that point. That's what excites us about the work. It's like how to find the entry points so that you can change some of the system. My mother is in the moment. She's 88. She has, like, people will call it Alzheimer's. I'd rather call it memory loss. I don't know what it is. And she is sometimes doesn't remember that she's just hung up when she's called me. And she'll call me again. Like, we'll hang up. The phone rings. It's mother. "Oh, how are you, Anne?" Like, we haven't talked for maybe at least a few hours or days or weeks. Her excitement hearing my voice. And yet she spends the winter learning a new classical Bach piece on the piano. And so there's something so extremely intelligent and so creative in the midst of sometimes very simple conversations. But I found with her, like, she'll say, she was married for about close to 60 years to my father before he died. And after he died, sometimes still she'll say, "Oh, I feel so bad, I don't remember Jim, how can I forget him?" And I'll say, "Well, Mom, what don't you remember?" And then she'll say something incredible, like stories I've never heard before, like, "Oh, I remember when we brought Barbie, my older sister, home from the hospital. It was their first child. And I remember that I handed her to him, and he was lying in bed, and how tenderly he held her and looked at her." So I think that sometimes in the midst of these states, if we can just find a way of entering. Otherwise, the conversation might be, "What day is it? Oh, it's what date, what month, what this, what that," something very repetitive that we'll both get caught in, which is very much like both of us having a form of dementia in the end. And so it's all like, how do you ask a question that just goes into their resource, which is so vast? So I know my own personal dreaming is that there's something very meaningful that's pulling on a person that, in my own life, I decided, okay, this summer I'm going to get organized. This summer, the last few years of my life that's been stacking up on my desk, I'm going to just devote it to getting organized. And all I can say is, my papers are like rabbits. They're multiplying. By the end of the summer, my desk is thicker in papers than at the start of the summer. And I realize I actually need memory loss. I really need to, like, forget a lot of the past of my life so that the newer things that I'm trying to do will have space. And so I'm also wondering if memory loss is an attempt to really forget the things that are no longer important. Sometimes it may be your relationship, which on the outside of the family can be devastating, but to the inside of the person's inner life might be relieving. And the days of the week are maybe the least important thing, as some of the deeper states that are calling, and that we as a culture will sometimes identify someone having a good memory, somebody that memory that remembers their partners or their children or their grandchildren or the date, and yet maybe there's some other incredible world that is also wanting time to be explored beyond what they've lived all their life. I think that's just about everything I thought was to say.
That seems a bit better.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. I'm overwhelmed with your attention. It's so exciting to be here. And this is such heartfelt work for me. It feels like you guys are going to pull the cork out of the bottle. And I'm just it's beautiful. Oh, so. We thought we'd give a little background and kind of frame the research. It has to take off from some point. So, what I'm reminded with Alzheimer's is like the first day of orientation when I entered engineering school. They said, look to the person on your left, look to the person on your right. One of you won't be there in 4 years. That's about how I feel about Alzheimer's right now, because I'm 60 years old. And I expect to live a long time. I have a grandmother to live to 106, and I'm planning to get there too. In only 25 years, I'm going to be 85 years old. And my oldest and dearest childhood friend, Stan, is also 60 years old. And he's going to live a long time. I'm going to make sure he makes it there too. But in only 25 years, one of us will have Alzheimer's. That's what the current statistics, that's statistically speaking, that 50% of everyone over the age of 85 has Alzheimer's or will contract Alzheimer's. Another way to think of that is in 87 days from today, the first baby boomers will turn 60. So when we turn 85, every other baby boomer is going to have Alzheimer's. It's a startling statistic. We just pulled a few statistics. There's so many statistics out there. We just pulled some that kind of struck a chord. Worldwide, there are 18 million identified Alzheimer's dementia patients. If you add to that 18, and I'm just using some numbers that we're picking out of the air, if you add 18 million significant others, average of 36 million children and 18 million siblings on the basis of two siblings per family, and an equal number of caregivers, we're talking about 180 million people. And that's only 60% of the dementia. Alzheimer's represents about 60%. So worldwide, it comes to about 300 million people that are experiencing it right now in the moment. So Alzheimer's is a pandemic, and that's a new word. I just learned that word. And I think pandemic means it's everywhere, it's big, and it's getting bigger. That's my definition of it. Right now, half of all the nursing home residents in the country have Alzheimer's dementia. More than 7 out of 10 people with Alzheimer's dementia live at home, where almost 75% of their care is given by family and friends. Basically, it's a safe prediction that everyone in the room tonight will be affected by Alzheimer's dementia at some time during our life or your lifetime. And in terms of lifestyle trends, there's one lifestyle trend that I found really interesting in terms of the baby boomers. One of the lifestyle trends is that the baby boomers are going to head towards living together, a return to communal living, seeking lifestyles that are affordable, social, and supportive. That's a kind of interesting lifestyle trend that goes with that those statistics. What is dementia? Just a brief, and I also have to really give you some background on me. I live and work outside of the therapeutic community and outside of the Western medical community. So I'm not giving you any medical definitions. I'm giving you some basic definitions here that others can, I'm sure, fill in more facts on. But to me, it was just I think of dementia, and I was just surprised to learn that dementia itself is not a disease. Dementia is a symptom that comes with other diseases. It is a loss of mental function in two or more areas, such as language, memory, visual, and spatial abilities, or judgments severe enough to interfere with daily life. The three largest causes of dementia, Alzheimer's, as I mentioned, is 60%. There are ranges there from 50 to 75. I'm picking some easy ones. 60% Alzheimer's, 30% multi-infarct dementia, and I think that's vascular, TIA type category, and then 10% is all the rest. And all the rest can be Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, Pick's disease, Lewy body, there are a number of other diseases that go into that category. So Alzheimer's itself, to give a little definition of Alzheimer's disease, and this is according to the National Alzheimer's Association, that classifies it as a medical textbook, but that's, they certainly are the leaders in research. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive brain disorder that gradually destroys a person's memory and ability to learn, reason, make judgments, communicate, and carry out daily activities. And there is no cure for Alzheimer's. But I need to kind of stress, it's hard to describe the work that we've experienced in relation to this paradigm, so I'll just repeat it once more. Alzheimer's disease is a progressive brain disorder that gradually destroys a person's memory and ability to learn, reason, make judgments, communicate, and carry out daily activities. So when we began our research, we had three research questions that we, and I have to give you some background on the impetus for this. Our research questions were, can process work be used to alleviate Alzheimer's dementia? That's the biggest question. Secondly, can we find meaning behind Alzheimer's dementia? Is there a creative hidden potential? And then third, is there really a loss of personal identity and personal history involved in Alzheimer's? And if so, is that loss permanent? And so the focus of our research now. We actually, makes it look like we're more organized than we are. We just wrote the post research questions because they were more intuitive at the time. We were just doing the work, and it was a personal desire and need. So I'm going to give you conclusions, then we'll have to go back and fill in with some actual case examples. This is what Stan and I have culminated as our research results. After working with individuals suffering from early to advanced stage Alzheimer's using a progressive form of awareness facilitation, and that's process work, we believe Alzheimer's and other dementias may involve a complex spiritual growth process in the background of what otherwise appears to a conventional observer as unrelenting deterioration into a mindless pathological state. We would like to propose that, number one, even in the most advanced demential states, somebody is home. Nobody is altogether gone. That's been our experience. They are trying to communicate with themselves and the outside world to the best of their abilities. It is possible to establish two-way communication even in the most advanced dementia state. We can help facilitate inner awareness of the spiritual growth in people for their benefit and the benefit of the family and society. And lastly, it is also possible to be in relationship even in the most advanced dementia states, including coma. Our method of communication consists of multi-level, multi-channel awareness facilitation based on the pioneering work that's being done here by many of you in the Process Work Center and Andrew and all his associates, which is wonderful. This place is magical. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. With regard to awareness, we have a concept of awareness and our experience of awareness, and so this is also probably kind of a conclusion, but if awareness could be bottled, if we put in a bottle, it would be hailed as a miracle drug for the body and the mind. The more a person experiencing Alzheimer's dementia and his or her immediate family and community can be aware of the underlying processes, the more inner resources, outer interventions people can draw on. Awareness interacts at both the macro level of the body and cellular level. Awareness does not replace medical care. Awareness is an act of reverence that complements and enhances the whole person, mind, body, emotion, and spirit. And in our personal experience, process work awareness facilitation is effective for Alzheimer's dementia. Now we have our research bias, which we have to admit to. Our research bias is that because of our experience, we want to raise awareness and relieve the suffering and the stigma for this large universe of people with Alzheimer's and other dementias, and their families and caregivers. We want to share the many ways of connecting deeply through entering their worlds. And we want to tell the story of Stan's father so that more people can open to the gifts and the blessings that go along with this intense and very difficult time. And therein is we talk in gifts and blessings, and you really never hear that when you hear the word Alzheimer's. You don't hear gifts and blessings. So this is scary to talk about. Okay. Scary? Looking at a big bold, big Alzheimer's Association that says nobody's home. It's a paradigm. Huge paradigm shift. Sometimes the messenger doesn't get treated very well. I know, this is why it's so incredible to be here. This is just... The world is still flat. So the benefits. For people in early stage Alzheimer's, the benefits I work as expressed by grateful patients are, one, the feeling of being aided and understood instead of remaining psychologically and emotionally isolated and helpless. And two, the opportunity to go further into knowing and expressing themselves in their own terms. For the family members, staff members, volunteers, and administrators, the benefits can include reduced feelings of hopelessness, depression, and burnout common to Alzheimer's caregivers, and less fear, added peace of mind, and reduced stress from a greater awareness of a larger spiritual process at work, and the opportunity of being closer in relationship with their afflicted loved one, and the opportunity to establish alternative communication patterns which are useful in the advanced stages of the disease. The benefits for the healthcare profession may include techniques for managing people in early stages at home, and techniques for managing difficult and extreme states without or with reduced force or restraints that are needed, and improved management of patients in remote and comatose states. And then for society, the long-term benefits of the work may be both direct and indirect. Direct benefits could include more effective forms of patient management and care, along with reduced expense for the long-term care of Alzheimer's patients. And indirect benefits may be reduced cost of employee benefits throughout the benefit universe. The immense tragedy and huge expense of caring for those in Alzheimer's states of consciousness have made Alzheimer's dementia a major social issue and a moral issue. So, what is going on inside the Alzheimer's state? This is where it gets really The other night I mentioned somebody, Alzheimer's is fun, and I mean, nobody really, I mean, it's great. I'm just kind of hanging out there.
That's the one side.
That's the one side. It's just in the moment, it felt because there's just so many moments that I had joy and attention. Traditionally, there are stages to Alzheimer's that are described. The simplest description are in the conventional medical terms are three basic stages. One is early stage, where they are still independently and capable of independent living. The second stage is where they are still ambulatory, but they're incapable of independent living. And the third stage is where they are no longer ambulatory, and they're bedridden or wheelchair-ridden, and they need 24... Second stage is supervision, and the third stage is 24/7 care. And those three stages have now been expanded into seven stages, but I still think of them as the three basic stages, and they're very much linear in terms of the progression of disease. Our research has come up with... we have discovered six underlying processes, and this is more like a different look at what the stages of the disease are, but they're not stages because they're non-linear. And I hate categories like everybody else does, but this groups things so we can communicate kind of what we experience. In summary, we discussed six underlying processes in Alzheimer's dementia. And the first one is working on unfinished business, meeting new aspects of the personality, harvesting a lifetime of experience, creating sacred space, exploring the beauty and meaning of life, and making spiritual connections. And I'll give a little description of each, but we're not going to get into the examples at this moment. You'll have to hang with me a little while before we get into the examples. Working on the unfinished business. This refers to working on those issues that can repeat or cycle not only from minute to minute and year to year, but also from generation to generation. Such issues can be abuse, neglect, unexpressed love, anger, fear, revenge, grief, guilt, shame, remorse, religion, spirituality. The second is meeting and experiencing new aspects of personality, or I should say partially lived aspects of the personality that want more expression. The third is harvesting a lifetime of experiences. This means gathering and revisiting, analyzing, and simply savoring memories. Creating sacred space. This means creating a safe, secure, physical, and emotional place where he can experience or follow himself and feel accepted. It's space without demands, to relax, re-energize, to experiment with thoughts or emotions, to pray or meditate. Exploring the beauty and meaning of life. This means the ability to step outside of oneself and take a look at all the parts and the pattern of our existence and savor those things in the moment. And making spiritual connections. These are as normal as studying Bible, prayer, and meditation in the early stages, or as far out as seeking altered states of consciousness in the later stages. So, that's kind of a research framework. And what we thought we'd do is give you some history of Stan's father, who precipitated all of this research. And Stan's father contracted Alzheimer's disease. And what we're trying to do is we're going all the way to the end of the story, but I have to kind of frame the beginning of the story, give some framework for it, but there's so much there that it's, I'm not sure how to get framed. We're going to tell you this.
Go for it, and we'll help it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you to pitch in. So, Stan's father, he entered the Mantino, Illinois Veterans Home with advanced Alzheimer's disease at the age of 74. And that's the point in time where I had my first experience and knowledge of Alzheimer's at all. One of the privileges I had in this work is to say that one of the principles of process work is a beginner's mind. Well, I had a real clean slate. And a complete beginner's mind.
Tom was gracious enough. He studied a little bit of process work, and I'd go out and visit as often as I could from Victoria. And I said, why don't you go relate with Dad, interact with Dad once a month, and videotape it, and send me the tapes. So that's how we got going.
Well, I thought about whether I was going to do that or not. And that commitment was a really big one, because I thought, what if I start it and then I bail out? And there are many considerations here.
No, after seeing your dismounts off the high bar in gymnastics, I knew you wouldn't bail out.
So I said to Stan, what if I have a breakthrough? And he said, oh my God, if you have a breakthrough, it'll screw up the whole family. Alzheimer's is a family. The whole family has Alzheimer's, and it's the butterfly effect. It's if anybody and anything moves in the system, it affects all the other parts of the system. So it was really, I had some really beginner's mind questions at the beginning. Stan's father is in his advanced Alzheimer's stage, and it is now. We're moving 4 years later, and he has been through, he was in a coma 7 months before. He was sent off to the hospital with us from the Illinois Veterans Home. Did not actually have an Alzheimer's unit at that time, and he went off to the St. Mary's Hospital in Kankakee. And worked with him there in coma, and he came back, and then 7 months later, he is now, he had been in another coma state 8 days earlier, and this is now 7 days into a death vigil. And so I'm consulting with Stan, and I played geography too. Mantino, Illinois Veterans Home is wonderful, but it's 90 miles away. It's over an hour and a half, 2 hour drive. So one of my days in, it would be basically an 8 hour day. I would do an hour's worth of preparation. I'd do a half an hour or more preparation on my own. Then I would call Stan and work with Stan on the phone for a half an hour to an hour and a half. Then I would drive a couple hours, go into Mantino, work for a couple hours, drive back, and then I'd write up all my notes, make copies of the tapes, ship the tapes off, and then we'd consult again. So we would do this basically once a month on that basis. So during this time, many things have happened. I'm thinking 18 months in, where we have reports actually for Alzheimer's, he's actually improved, and we've got up until he lost his mobility, he made a great stride in improvement. But so at this point, we are discussing what could possibly be his unfinished business on this earth. In other words, he went into a coma 7 months earlier. He could have died at that time. He went into a coma 8 days earlier. He could have died at that time. He could have died yesterday or the day before. What is keeping him here? Oh, yeah, stroke. That's right.
He had a stroke.
7 days, 7 days, 8 days before he had a stroke.
No, farther away.
Yeah, he had a stroke, he went farther away. So, now this is the first time where, if you remember, the definition is the loss of ability to reason, remember, and imagine. So how could somebody who can't do that have unfinished business? I mean, we're talking about a question that's a little hard to fathom, but for us, we were in that universe, so we didn't think anything of it, but I'm trying to explain it. In retrospect, I'm trying to find the starting point of the story. So Stan's...
I think I one starting point, actually, was when Dad was in coma, and we knew I had a dream, and I was sure he was going.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I actually called up Joe, and I worked with Joe on the phone.
Yes.
And somehow we came to the conclusion that he needed a party. That's what he needed before he could leave. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Yes, we have to be written in detail, so we can, if we look together, we'll be able to read about it. So it's great. But yes, that was very important. You discussed he, in his earlier days, he had Stan's father of character. You should tell you something about him as a character, because you need to have some. He drove an ambulance. He was a jack of all trades, and then he worked as a mortician, as a mortician's assistant. And so one of his jobs was to take. He would. It was an Irish community, so he had to go to the homes for the wakes and stand guard over the body at the wake, because apparently the Irish wakes, which I don't have any knowledge of, they would give the deceased a couple of drinks and get them up and dance with them. So he was responsible for guarding his embalming job at that time. So he had a relationship with that. So parties were a big part of his life throughout his, and that was really important. Now he's laying there, and he's on oxygen. He has high fever, pneumonia in one lung, and he is simply doing the breathing gurgling. Fran has been to visit him three days earlier. Well, the hospital was called, the nursing home was called and said, you know, this is it. You better be here. Come and be with him. So Fran had done that. She's come down and she sat, but her visit was sitting there listening to her husband's labored breathing. And that's the visit. That's the extent of the visit, the extent of the communication, the non-communication. And so I had a dream that night that Stan had called me and that he had told me in the dream that his father had died. Yeah, well, his dream is different to the times, yeah. So I had I talked to Stan about it, and he told me what he and Joe talked about, and that was a wish, and we both thought, oh, it's a veterans home, it's an institution. I mean, your whole idea of a party was just the farthest things from me. I mean, it just didn't seem, the whole family's depressed, Fran's depressed, and Stan planted the seed, and I said, well, I could take her tomorrow. I'd be happy to take her tomorrow. But I thought it was really important to do that. So in the meantime,
Tom likes that, yeah.
So I thought, well, slow. What came over me was this great sense of exhilaration and celebration. I was ready to celebrate, but I knew that the entire rest of the world was nowhere near where I was. I felt the deadline. There's something about a deadline that is very freeing. And so I pack up the car, and I pack up, I put hats, and I stop to pick up champagne and wine. I pack my guitar, and I trot off to pick up Fran. And Fran and I show up at the institution. We have a wonderful drive down, but I don't tell her we're going to have a party. I don't even think it's, I'm just going to follow the energy. If the energy's there, follow the feedback. So we get in the room, and I unfold this huge, beautiful, colorful party decoration, hang it right over the IV stand, cover up all the medical equipment like this. And Fran says, yes, a party. Stan, we're going to have a party. And Stan, who's in the state, startles her by opening his eyes wider and nodding his head. And she says, oh, you're raising your eyebrow. It's too bad we didn't stop and get some wine. And I said, don't worry, I've got the wine. And so this turns into a very joyous occasion. And he is giving signals. I'm not going to read you all the signals he's giving, but there's just some really key moments here that I want to depart. He coughs, giving feedback, and I say to him, you've been waiting for your party, haven't you? And I'm still in the back of my mind getting, what is the unfinished business? Now, in the meantime, I had said to Fran in the morning, now, are there any other family members who want to go along? And so she made kind of a feeble attempt to invite other family members along, and it turned out, so I had a clue that the unfinished business was between Fran and Stan, and it didn't involve her.
The attempt was very feeble.
It was feeble. And the ones who, you know, I don't think she tried once in form and gets rid of her time, you know, so she didn't even talk much about it. So anyway, on the way in, we stopped for ice cream, too. So we stopped in, picked up some ice cream at the commissary there. So she gives him a couple big smacks and says, "I kissed you, Stanley. Look at him and look at me. I kissed you, honey. Yes, isn't that sweet? You're a doll." He starts making some very much stronger hug sounds. I repeat them and going deeper with those sounds. And we tell him, "We are going to, you know, celebrate your life. In the meantime, we're trying different hats on. We're trying on the hats with the, you know, trying all the different hats that we're out with." And I have some pictures of that. And then I break out the champagne. And I got a few pictures here that we can. This is Stan with his hat. I need to look at him closer later. And you'll notice the eyes and the, the whole. This is an extreme Alzheimer's patient who has no mind. This is a mindless pathological state.
He's right there.
That's what's so hard to communicate about it. And here's Fran and Stan with both there. She blacked on a black fedora. And at this point, where we're starting to feed the champagne, I had been to, when he had gone in the coma before, 8 days earlier, I had done coma work at St. Mary's, and I ran up to Milwaukee to a seminar that Mox was presenting, and I got some case consultation from Mox. And so what she's doing there is what Mox has advised me to do. She's got a glass of champagne, but she's dipped her finger in the champagne, and she is now placing, see, the doctor had told us that he had lost his gag reflex and that he could no longer swallow. I mean, he's really there. So she puts on, and she says, he starts licking his lips, and she starts feeding to him. He's chugging champagne. I mean, he is drinking champagne out of the cup. So that was just, so at that point, I said, well, I knew that what we were there for, and I had to kind of keep the, I was facilitating this party. And I said, are there any last rites that you would like to perform here? So we did some very symbolic and meaningful religious rites that they had done as a couple. And she had carried a newspaper clipping with her, and she read this article. Then I talked to him, and I just tell him about, we were celebrating everything and talking about everything. And she was reviewing all things and how they partied together, and I talked about, actually, the part we're not going to discuss tonight, but is that he got the 8 months earlier, when he had come out of the near comatose state, he had actually given us a report and totally shocked us when he said, "Beautiful. It's really beautiful." And I repeated it. I had that confirmed. He confirmed it 3 times in a row. Fran and I just went completely startled. And so I reminded him, beautiful, he's working on eternity. Those are two things that we had uncovered in his early ones. So I go out to the car and get my guitar, and we start singing some songs. And the singing, Stan sings long, and he's singing in a strong voice using vowels, I mean vocalizations. He's not, you know, coming across any words, but he's giving songs. And
he hadn't talked for a long time.
Yeah,
months and months and months, and he doesn't have all the consonants, but he's got the words, basic tuning in the words of the song.
He wanted to make a request. I mean, it was, and we were thrilled because we also included the institution. When the nurses came in, we invited them to join in the party, and one of the nurses came in and said, "What you're doing is better than anything we could do for him now." See, I mean, they joined in. I can't say enough about what Mantino or the care center. They were absolutely amazing. So we stopped singing, and Stan starts singing his own song. He's singing away, and so I just tried to mirror it, but he was really gone. And I was wondering if he was singing Bohemian, which was his natural language. So I, some of the, so some of the words could have been Bohemian, and I had not picked up even mispronunciation. So I said, so Fran says to me, Tom, do you know the old rugged cross, a nice old hymn? And Stan gives a very strong vocal movement and movement feedback. And I say, we need some hymns. And so we sing an old traditional hymn. And Stan, he responds to that in very strong sounds, and then he raises his upper body out of bed. Okay. And then I ask Fran, I said, well, Fran, why don't you tell him what you're going to do at the funeral? How are you going to celebrate his life? And so Fran does that. She says, this is the hymn that she's going to sing. She says, when anybody needs, she says, I'm going to, she says, most people, pick, oh, she said, this is good. Rock of Ages, I don't sing it only when I have to, but I remember clearly because that's what they sang at my mother's funeral when I was 6 years old. Most people pick that one, but for him, I'm going to pick When We Needed a Neighbor, You Were There. And it was so beautiful, she says, because you were always there, Stan. And that was celebrating his life. So I suggest at that time, and I'm flying by the seat of my pants, I have not done this before, this is way over my edge, I mean. I say, Fran, why don't you climb in bed with him? And she jumps with excitement at the suggestion, but she's too big an end for her. She does not do it at that moment. And so we sing another hymn, and then I sing another party song. And then Fran says, that was a pretty song Tom sang to you. He's a good singer. I bet you thought you were in heaven already. It's okay if you go on ahead of me. At that moment, physically, his entire body relaxed, the skin tone in his face, and Fran said, he looks so peaceful. The unfinished business was, he was still, now, this is the mindless pathological person who is still worried about being the provider of the family and how is his wife going to do without him. Is she going to be okay? And she has not yet said, okay, it's okay, I'll be okay, you can go on ahead of me. Came to that point, and I mean, the response was complete peace. It was really amazing. So I support him with what I had been taught to do. I said, we will miss you. If you're ready to go, that's good. We support you in that. If you want to stick around, that's good too. We'd love to see you stick around. Stasha's in agreement. I gave him feedback. Stan and we and I talked about it and told him we would miss him. And I said, but we will be around for another, and it's, we had to go, but we'd be around for another 10 minutes. And if there's anything that you need to say or anything you want us to know or anything we need to do for you, anything in the next 10 minutes, we would be here for 10 minutes. And we gave him that window. And Fran said, oh, Tom's pretty good. You were there with your grandmother before he died, weren't you? And so I sing him one more song, which is the hymn, How Great Thou Art. It's a very beautiful song. It's, O Lord my God, in an awesome wonder, consider all the worlds thy hands have made. I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. Then I say, Stan, there's water in your eyes. So his eyes had welled up with water, and I'm using blank access here. It's emotions, I don't know what kind of emotions they are. Happy, sad, celebratory, but it certainly was a huge emotional response to that hymn. So I said, well, I'll put my stuff in the van and set the Fran and give you some private time, so it's okay. Why don't you can get in bed if you want to. And Fran jumps into bed with him, which was really wonderful. She says, look where I am standing. I'm in your bed. And I said, now you're talking. Fran says, I'm in your bed, Stanley. Did you know that? It's your girlfriend. I'm your girlfriend, Frances, your sweetie. I'm in your bed and I'm going to hug you. Don't put your feet in my face like you did once. You can tell, I said, well, you can tell everybody you went to bedroom. And she says, it's not as comfortable as I remember beds. They didn't have all this equipment on them. Can I put my head on your pillow? He's got his eyes open a little bit. I said, Fran, don't worry about the eyes. Do what you need to do. And I said, Stan, I've got to go now. I'll see you on the other side. Have a wild party. Party on. Party on, dude. So I go out and I'm wiped. I lay down and I'm under a tree sleeping when she finds me. She says, I let Stan sleep too. And I said, that was fun. Stan is the best audience I ever had. And Fran says, well, what about me? I was listening. I said, yes. I said, but Stan sang every song. He sang every song. So we climb in the van. I say, well, Fran, the last time I saw you, you were in bed with Stan. How was it? And she says, laughing, I didn't get as much time because the doctor and the nurse came in. It was just like when the kids were home. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to say goodbye to Stan. You know, when I got home and tell this story, nobody is going to believe me. And 24 hours later, Stan stopped breathing in his sleep. And the story is, I mean, I called it an Alzheimer's surprise party. I was thinking in my mind, I haven't done this yet, but list all the surprises. There's the surprise that there's relationship in advance. There's the surprise that not only did he relate to Fran, but working with Alzheimer's patients is very important to work one-on-one. They're very confused when there's more than one person in the room. He was actually able to relate to both of us at the same time, which was really kind of incredible. It was incredible. It was. But imagine the suffering. I don't know this. I assume this, and I really have nothing. But how many times does a family not get to say goodbye to their afflicted Alzheimer's family member? And the opportunity to say goodbye is enormous. That's just absolutely breathtaking. So.
Thanks, Tom. Your breath. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being here. It's such a privilege.
Ten minutes?
Oh, awesome. Oh, we have lots of time. Okay. Thanks, Lee.
That's an advanced Alzheimer's. I mean, I went all the way to the end of the last day. I mean, that was the last day of the last minute of an entire Alzheimer's process. I worked with early Alzheimer's, and I'm going to go right out on a limb. I have at least two examples where the Alzheimer's is no longer Alzheimer's. And you could go.
We got to do the exercise. You got, we need 10 minutes, yeah. But we'll hang around during the break and afterwards if you want to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, please just approach me. I'd be happy to talk about other stages.
After that, we want to give everybody a chance to experience Alzheimer's if you want. Please follow along as much as you want or don't want, or change the steps of this exercise. It's about a 10-minute exercise. You should have. It should be in the bottom of your pile there. Okay, everybody's got a copy. So we'll do this exercise and then we'll fade into a break. The first step is life path. Consider the life path you are on. Your beliefs, your career, relationships, any pursuits you love, the purpose of your life. Make a few notes if you want. So let's take a minute to do that. Everybody got something, or anybody need more time? Okay. A second step, imagine you have dementia. You can work from your observations of people you know, or from your own imagination of a dementia state. Fantasize into what this dementia would be like. Go ahead and see yourself. Hear yourself, at least internally. Feel into the state, get your body feelings behind it, and move into the posture of that person, or move as that person. You might want to get up and walk around, or shuffle around, or slump in your chair, or whatever you imagine the movement of that state is. And we'll do this for about 3 minutes. You might be having thoughts, or maybe not having thoughts, certain feelings. Now, some people may not want to come out, but if you do, take a half a minute to come out and then turn to a neighbor or somebody else and discuss your experience for a minute or two. What was it like in there? Some of you might have had like
good experiences.
Some of you might have had so-called bad experiences, scary, frightening, ecstatic, or just the beginnings of some experiences. Go ahead and talk it over with somebody for a minute. But I will. Now, if you could again go back into your dementia state, and while in there, hopefully maintain enough of a meta position or a meta communicator to ask yourself, who is that in there? What part of you? The one on holiday, the retired one, depressed one, tired one, the separated or divorced one, the introvert, or some other part. Okay, ready? Back in we go. Everything. It plugs right in. So then, when you're ready, now, if you're out and want to, share that with a neighbor. Just who the heck that was in there, just for half a minute. Our time is munching here. Share with each other. Who was that? Who was that? Okay, so, but, okay, but who was in that state? I mean, was there a former businessman who needed retirement? Was there, I don't know, someone who was done with a relationship and needed a separation? Was there beginner's mind? And no mind. Everything thrown away. Moo. Moo mind. Okay, rushing along with our time limit here, we could get back together and do the last step, that'd be great. Step number four is life path again. You might want to take years, in fact, yeah. How is this experience connected to or meaningful for your life journey, your life path? How is it different? Would it change your life path? If so, how in your daily life and relationships? And how when you're relating to the world? So how would that experience and the figure, a part of you that you found in there, interface or affect your life path? Turn to somebody and talk about it or not, and we'll just fade into a break from there. You want to do something? You want to say something? Yeah, let's do that. How was that? 10-minute break.